Stories of Journey to the West, Chapter 83.
Pigsy and Sha Wujing.
And the two of them basically clear a path as the demoness carries Tang Monk out to freedom.
Sun Wukong. He's nowhere in sight. And then Tang Sun Zhang points at the demon and just drops this bombshell. Your elder brother is in his belly.
Wow. So confirmation, Wukong is literally actually inside the monster.
Inside the monster. But, you know, this is Wukong we're talking about. He's already got a plan cooking.
Of course he does. He wouldn't be Wukong otherwise.
So from inside, he starts yelling at the demon, demanding she open her mouth so he can get out.
Bold move. Does she?
Mm-mm.
Does she listen?
Surprisingly, yeah. She opens up. But Wukong, quick as anything, shrinks himself way, way down. Almost invisible.
Okay, the shrinking trick. Classic.
And then he wriggles into her throat. Now, here's the really clever bit. He's worried she might just, you know, clamp down her teeth as he's coming out.
A legitimate concern, I'd say.
Totally. So he whips out his iron staff, blows on it, poof, transforms it into this tiny little thing they call a date pit nail.
A date pit nail. So incredibly small, but super strong.
Exactly. He uses this tiny nail to prop open her upper palate. Gives him just enough space and time.
Smart. Very smart. Leverage in a tight spot.
Then, boom, he springs out of her mouth, instantly pops back to his normal, formidable size, grabs his golden cudgel, and just launches this immediate, furious attack. Mm-hmm. No hesitation.
And that's what's so amazing about Wukong, isn't it? It's not just the escape. It's how he turns that moment, that absolute vulnerability being inside her, into the launching pad for his counterattack. He used her own body, her own overconfidence against her.
Right. And that leads straight into this epic fight.
Oh, yeah. The tush, his cudgel. Against her, her twin swords. It's a fierce clash.
You can almost picture it.
But it's more than just, you know, hitting each other with weapons. The text itself gives it these really rich symbolic layers.
Okay, tell us about that.
Well, Wukong is described as Tasmon, like heaven-born monkey, mind ape body, all that innate spiritual power, that wild spirit.
Mm-hmm.
The demon, on the other hand, she's an earthborn spirit, basically a young female skeleton, much more tied to the, well, the earthly.
So heaven versus earth almost.
In a way, yeah.
Yeah.
And their goals reflect that too. The demon wants to take his prime yang energy, his essence, to become a mate. It's about material union, maybe consumption.
Right.
Wukong, his goal in the fight is framed as tashe, to battle this pure yang energy, to form a sacred embryo. It's about spiritual cultivation, overcoming earthly desires.
Wow. So the fight itself represents this deeper philosophical conflict.
Exactly. And isn't it fascinating how these old stories just weave that stuff right into the middle of these like super exciting action scenes? It's not just a fight. It's nature versus spirit almost.
It really elevates it, doesn't it? Makes it feel weightier. Okay, so while Wukong's locked in this this symbolic and very real battle, what about the others? Pigsy and Sandy.
Ah, yes. Enter the backup.
Pigsy naturally starts complaining. He's watching this and grumbling about Wukong's methods.
What's his brilliant idea?
He basically says, look, if he was inside her belly, why didn't he just punch her from the inside, give her a full belly red?
Huh. Classic Pigsy. Just, you know, smash your way out. Crude, direct, messy.
Totally his style. Impulsive.
Very. But it does highlight that side of him. Sandy, though, he's a bit different, isn't he?
Yeah, Sandy's more pragmatic and loyal, definitely loyal. He kind of hears Pigsy out, but then says, well, even if their help isn't much, it's like adding wind to a fart.
Meaning even a little bit helps or just makes more noise.
Yeah, like even a small effort can contribute something, however minor. It's a bit resigned maybe, but loyal.
It's something, right? Better than just standing there.
And funnily enough, despite his grumbling, Pigsy actually gets this burst of energy.
Mm-hmm.
He and Sandy decide to, well, put that adding wind to a sart into action.
So they jump in?
They jump in, rakes and staffs, swinging, joining the fight against the demon.
Okay, so now it's 3-1. That must turn the tide.
It does put the pressure on. But here's where the demon shows she's not just about brute force. She's overwhelmed, so she pulls a really cunning escape move.
Hmm, what does she do?
Quick as lightning, she slips off one of her fancy flower shoes, breathes a spell on it.
Okay.
And transforms the shoe into a perfect copy of herself. This shoe double keeps fighting Wukong and the others.
Wow, a decoy.
Exactly. And while they're busy fighting the shoe, her true form turns into like a clear breeze and just zips straight back towards the cave entrance. The consequence of this trick.
Yeah.
It's absolutely devastating for our heroes. The real demon, the clear breeze, gets back to the cave entrance, finds Tang Sanzang just sitting there, totally alone, completely vulnerable.
Oh, no.
She grabs him instantly, snatches the luggage too, bites clean through the horse's reins,
a primitive war white horse,
and drags both the master and the horse back inside the bottomless cave. Gone. Just like that.
Oof. That's a huge blow. Wukong must have been.
Furious doesn't even cover it. When Pigsy finally smashes the flower shoe and they realize they've been duped, Wukong is livid. He's yelling at his brothers, desperately looking around for his master. Mm-hmm. Just frantic.
Understandable. He got tricked, and the master's gone again.
But here's something I found really interesting. Mm-hmm. In this moment of total crisis, Pigsy, he actually kind of laughs.
Laughs? Seriously?
Yeah. It's this weird, dark humor moment. He says, Tyrion, basically, nothing succeeds without three tries.
Huh. So he's saying...
He's basically telling Wukong, well, guess you got to go in there a third time.
Wow. Only Pigsy could find a crude joke at a time like that. But maybe there's something almost encouraging in it, like perseverance?
Maybe. It certainly underscores that idea that big tasks take multiple attempts. But Wukong's initial reaction is just pure anguish. The text says he's... seeing the saddle, remembering the fine horse, shedding tears, thinking of kin, just heartbroken.
You feel for him there. It's personal now.
But that despair, it shifts really fast into just, like, grim determination. He tells Pigsy and Sandy, guard the entrance, don't let her escape again, and he prepares to go back in.
Alone this time.
Yeah. He talks about his original body, strange-faced, strong at heart, powerful since childhood, like he's tapping into his core primal strength now. No more tricks, maybe. Just power.
He's doubling down. Going back into the lion's den, so to speak.
And he bursts into the demon's main lair, ready for anything. Mm. But it's empty.
Empty after all that.
Completely deserted. The demon, clearly spooked by Wukong, just not giving up. She's already moved deeper into her cave system, which is apparently huge, like 300 lions.
Wow. So she's playing hide and seek now in this massive underground complex.
Wukong is just beside himself. He's so frustrated he starts calling Tang Senzang, a Tang Senzang formed from bad luck, a scripture monk cast from disaster. Mm-hmm. He's really at his wit's end. Where does he even start looking?
Yeah, that sounds like true despair setting in. Hope seems lost.
But then, just as he's about to, I don't know, maybe give up, he smells something. Yeah, incense.
Yeah.
Faint but distinct, burning incense.
Incense? In a demon's cave? That's odd.
Right. So he follows the scent deeper into the cave, and he finds this hidden little shrine. There's a big, fancy gilded incense burner and two golden tablets on an altar.
Golden tablets, like memorial tablets. What do they say?
This is the real shocker, the kicker to the whole chapter, really.
Yeah.
One tablet reads, Position of Honored Father King Li.
King Li, Li Jing, the pagoda-bearing heavenly king.
The very same. And the other tablet,
yeah.
Position of Honored Brother Prince Neza.
Neza, his arch nemesis sometimes, ally other times. What on earth are their tablets doing in this demon's shrine?
Exactly. This is the huge revelation. This demon, this earthborn spirit, is somehow connected to, maybe even related to, two major figures in the Taoist heavenly hierarchy.
That is completely unexpected. It reframes everything about her.
And it instantly reframes Wukong's whole strategy. Forget chasing her through 300 Lilo Venals.
Yeah, why bother now? He's got leverage. Big time.
He's overjoyed. The text says he doesn't even think about finding the demon or Kang Sanzang right then. He knows this discovery is the key.
So what does he do? Confront her with it?
Nope. Even better, strategically,
yeah.
He shrinks his iron staff down, pockets it, grabs the two golden tablets and the incense burner.
He takes them.
He takes them and walks right out of the cave, laughing triumphantly.
Wow. So he's gone from brute force to despair to suddenly having this incredible piece of political... ammunition. Information is power, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
He realized the fight wasn't just physical anymore. This connection, this reverence she shows, that's her weak spot. He pivoted from using his cudgel to using, well, heavenly politics.
A brilliant shift in tactics, understanding the underlying connections. Wukong is outside the demon's cave. He's actually laughing.
Laughing? Why?
Well, Baji and Shaosang are just as confused as you are. They think, oh, great, he's found some quick way in. Master saved.
But that's not it.
Nope. Not yet, anyway. See, Wukong hasn't rescued anyone. What he has done is found something crucial inside the demon's place.
Ah, okay. Evidence.
Exactly. He sets it down carefully, and Baji and Shaosang look closer.
And what is it?
It's a plaque, a memorial plaque. And it's inscribed with a Venerable Father Li Qianwang's position.
Li Qianwang, the pagoda-bearing heavenly king.
The very same. And also Venerable Brother Neza, Third Prince's position.
Neza, his son. Okay, so a family shrine.
Precisely. And this is where Wukong's mind just clicks. It's brilliant, really.
How so? What does he figure out?
Well, think about it. How does he go from seeing this plaque to a full-blown plan? He doesn't just guess.
Right.
He deduces, like instantly, that this demon must be Li Tianwang's daughter.
Yep.
And Nessa's sister.
Whoa. Okay.
And not just that, but she's come down to the mortal world without permission, illegally, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And she's pretending to be a demon specifically to grab Tang Xinzang.
So it's not random. It's targeted.
Mm-hmm.
And it's tied to this high-ranking family.
Exactly. It's a strategic inference. He sees the plaque, connects it to celestial law, and understands the whole picture. The way to get the master back isn't fighting this demon.
It's going after her powerful family in heaven.
You got it. It's a breach of heavenly protocol at the highest levels.
Okay, that is clever. Wow. So what's his next move? He's got the evidence.
His next move is pure genius. So he decides right then and there, grab the plaque, grab an incense burner he also found.
Okay.
And go straight up to heaven, to the Jade Emperor himself, and file a formal su.
An imperial complaint. Like a lawsuit.
Pretty much. A formal accusation filed directly with the supreme ruler. A total shift from his usual methods.
Wow. Okay, that's bold.
It really shows Wukong understanding the system, right? Knowing that sometimes navigating the bureaucracy is more effective than just fighting.
But surely that's risky. Baji must have something to say about this.
Oh, he does. Baji, ever the pragmatist, immediately pipes up. He's like, whoa, hang on.
Yeah.
He reminds Wukong of that saying, Don, if you accuse someone of a capital crime and you're wrong, you could face the same penalty yourself.
Oof. High stakes.
Very. Baji warns him, you know, an AC isn't something you just file casually, especially not against someone like Li Jing.
But Wukong's not deterred, I'm guessing.
Not one bit. He's completely confident in his plan. He actually dictates the complaint right there on the spot for Baji.
He dictates it. What does it say?
It formally accuses Aisai Yidong, Li Jing, and his son Neza of improper family discipline, which sounds maybe mild, but for a celestial general?
That's a serious charge, right? It reflects on his fitness to rule, almost.
Exactly. It suggests a breakdown in his own household, which implies a failure in his heavenly duties. The complaint goes on to say their daughter was allowed to tarry, become a demon, harm countless lives, and capture Tang Xinzang too. It demands their arrest, the master's rescue, and justice.
Wow. He lays it all out. How do Baji and Shaoseng react then?
They're totally on board now. Thrilled. They're like, go, hurry, do it.
Okay, so Wukong's off to heaven. How does that go? Does he just march in?
Pretty much. He grabs the plaque. The incense burner hops on his cloud, zoom, straight to the southern heavenly gate.
The main entrance.
Yep. And the guards there, the heavenly kings, even the really powerful ones.
They try to stop him?
Nope. They see him, Sun Wukong, carrying this stuff, looking determined, and they just bow, respectfully. Don't even try to block his path.
That reputation still carries weight, huh?
Absolutely. Even after 500 years locked away, everyone remembers the havoc he caused. Nobody wants a repeat. They know better than to obstruct him when he looks like this.
So he gets past the gate easily. Then what?
Then he heads to Tongming Hall, which is like a major administrative center. He runs into the four heavenly masters there.
Important officials.
Right. And they are visibly startled. You can almost hear them muttering like, oh, great. Look who it is. This troublemaker. Wonder who is going to accuse this time.
Uh-huh. They know his style.
They do. Reluctantly, they escort him to the Lingxiao Hall. The Jade Emperor's palace, the main audience chamber.
The big boss himself.
Yep. And Wukong walks in, lays down the plaque and the burner, bows, presents the complaint, formalities observed.
And the Jade Emperor, what's his reaction? Does he hesitate?
Not at all, apparently. He reads the complaint and immediately issues a decree. Just like that.
Wow. Quick turnaround.
He summons Tai Bai Jinxing, that's Great White Planet, Venus, a trusted messenger, tells him, take this order to Li Jing at Yunlu Palace, his residence.
So the summons is issued. Is Wukong satisfied?
Almost. He pushes a little more. Typical Wukong, right? He asks the Jade Emperor to punish them severely.
Why?
He says he's worried that other problems might pop up if they aren't dealt with decisively now, covering his bases.
Makes sense. Does the Emperor agree?
Well, here's a twist. The Jade Emperor orders Wukong, the plaintiff, the one making the accusation, to go with Taibai jinxing to deliver the summons.
Get out. He has to serve the papers himself, basically.
Kind of. The Heavenly Masters confirm, yep, that's an Imperial command. So off he goes with Taibai jinxing.
Okay, this is getting good. The confrontation is coming.
Exactly. They arrive at Yunglu Palace, Li Jing's place. Li Jing comes out, obviously expecting to greet Taibai jinxing, the respected celestial messenger.
And then he sees Wukong standing there.
And his face just changes instantly. Pure anger.
And you're saying this isn't just about the lawsuit?
Oh, no, definitely not. There's history here. Deep personal history, you have to remember.
Why?
500 years ago, during Wukong's big rebellion, the Havoc in Heaven.
Right.
The Jade Emperor specifically appointed Li Jing as the Fritong, the Grand Marshal to subdue demons, and Nezha as a key commander. Their mission, to stop Wukong.
And how did that go?
They failed, repeatedly. Humiliatingly, you could say. Wukong basically ran rings around them.
Ah.
That's the Etshin the text mentions. That deep-seated grudge, the animosity, the memory of that failure and humiliation, it's been simmering for 5 centuries.
So seeing Wukong show up at his door, accusing him.
It just ignites all that old fury. It's personal.
So Li Jing is furious. What does he do? Does he lash out?
He's barely controlling himself. He demands, you know, what decree is this? And Taibai jinxing tells him it's Shihe, Sun Wukong's complaint against you.
Oh.
And Li Jing just explodes, thunderous rage. The text really emphasizes it.
But he still has to accept the decree, right? Imperial command.
He does. Despite the fury, celestial law is celestial law. He has to perform the proper ritual, set up the incense altar, and formally, gratefully receive the decree. Even boiling mad, he has to obey protocol. Now, Wukong's usually got a good nose for trouble, right? But this accusation, it just kicks off an immediate, massive reaction.
Oh, massive is the word. You can almost feel Li Tianwang's rage, like, shaking the room. The second he sees that imperial decree, bam, slams his hand down.
Curious.
This monkey. Falsely accused me. He's adamant, no demon daughter. He carefully lists his actual kids, you know?
Yeah, the 3 sons. Jinza serving the Buddha, Muza with Guanyin, and Nezha, who's right there with him.
And then the youngest... his daughter's Nenning, just 7, totally innocent.
Right. So to him, Wukong's claim is this massive false accusation. He even quotes the law, doesn't he?
He does. False accusation adds 3 grades to the punishment. You just know he wants Wukong dealt with, like, now.
And he doesn't waste any time. His reaction is so fast and honestly, pretty terrifying.
Totally. Orders Wukong tied up instantly with that demon binding rope.
And then grabs his own sword, the demon cutting sword, and just lunges. No hesitation, he's going for the kill.
Lethal intent, absolutely. But just as that sword is coming down,
Nezha steps in, blocks his dad's blade with his own sword, the waist cutting sword.
Shouting, Father King, stop, calm down. Sort of.
Yeah, something like that. Cease your anger.
Okay, but here's where it gets really weird. And kind of amazing. Li Tianwang's reaction to his son stopping him. It's not anger.
No, it's fear, pure terror.
The text says, greatly shocked and losing color. I mean, think about that. This super powerful heavenly king, terrified because his son blocked a sword.
It makes no sense on the surface, does it?
Not at all. It screams that there's something much, much deeper going on here, like some serious history between them.
And there absolutely is. The story actually pauses right there to tell us why Li Tianwang had that great shock.
Ah, okay. So it's not just a random detail.
Not at all. It all goes back to Nezha's, well, unbelievably rocky past with his father. You see, Nezha was special from birth, born with characters on his palms.
Right, the non-Za giving him his name.
Exactly. But he was trouble from day one, or day 3, technically, already causing chaos, stomping on the Dragon King's palace.
Trying to skin a dragon for a belt.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty intense for a toddler.
Right, a total chaos agent. So Li Tianwang, his father, starts thinking, you know, this kid is going to cause major problems. He fears the repercussions.
So what does he do?
He decides he has to kill his own son.
Whoa. Okay, that's extreme.
Incredibly extreme. But Nez's reaction is even more shocking in a way. As an act of defiance, of total rejection, he returns his body to his parents.
Returns his body? How?
The phrase is, cut flesh to return to mother, scraped bone to return to father. He literally gives back his physical form, his essence, his blood.
Oh my God.
Yeah, basically saying, we're done. I owe you nothing. A complete severance.
That is incredibly intense. Okay. Unbelievable, almost. So what happens then? How does he even exist after that?
Well, his soul, now disembodied, travels. It goes to the Western Paradise, straight to the Buddha.
He appeals to the Buddha.
Yeah. And the Buddha, with his, you know, divine wisdom, performs this amazing miracle, uses lotus root for bones, lotus leaves for clothes.
Wow.
And a special mantra, a life-restoring true mantra, to bring Neja back. But not just back. Back with immense divine power. A whole new body.
Okay, so rebirth through divine intervention. But surely, after his father tried to kill him.
Oh, he wanted revenge. Badly. He goes after Li Tianwang.
Understandable, I guess.
Totally. But the Buddha steps in again, promotes reconciliation. And this is key. He gives Li Tianwang that famous pagoda.
The exquisitely carved, translucent, golden relic pagoda of wishes. The one he always carries.
That's the one. Filled with glowing Buddhas. It's a powerful artifact that lets Li Tianwang control, or rather pacify Neja, by making Neja accept the Buddha as his true father, essentially.
So that's why he's the pagoda-bearing heavenly king. It's because of this whole history with Neja.
Exactly. And yeah. That's why Li Tianwang was greatly shocked back in our scene. He wasn't holding the pagoda right then.
So he was genuinely afraid Neja might still hold that grudge, might actually attack him without the pagoda's protection.
Precisely. That old fear, that ancient history, just flashed right back.
Wow. Okay. That completely changes how you see that moment. It's not just anger management issues. It's deep-seated trauma.
Absolutely. So now that Neja has sort of reminded his father of their unique relationship,
he can finally clear up the whole daughter mess.
Right. He explains she's not blood. She's Ingrace's daughter. Adopted.
Adopted out of grace or gratitude?
Gratitude, yeah. See, she's actually a demoness by nature. A gold-nosed, white-furred rat demon.
Catchy name.
Isn't it? Became a monster about 300 years ago, and her big crime. She stole stuff from the Buddha's place, Spirit Mountain, fragrant flowers, precious candles.
Bold move. So Li Tianwang and Neja caught her as part of their heavenly duties.
They did. But here's another twist. Instead of punishment.
Let me guess. The Buddha again.
You got it. The Buddha shows profound mercy, spares her life, and gives this teaching something about
accumulating water to raise fish, never to fish them. Feeding deer in deep mountains, hoping for long life.
That's it. Like, nurture life. Don't just exploit it. Foster things with good intentions.
Nice. So the rat demoness was grateful.
Overwhelmed with gratitude. So she pledges allegiance, says, okay, Li Tianwang, you're my adoptive dad. Neja, you're my adoptive brother.
And she even set up tablets to worship them.
She did, which is kind of wild. So she has these multiple identities, right?
They have them back.
Her original demon name, the gold-nosed rat one. Then she calls herself Half Guanyin.
Half Guanyin, after stealing from the Buddha. That's audacious.
Right. Maybe trying to claim some kind of twisted holiness or power. And then her current name, Lady Earth Burrowing.
Lady Earth Burrowing. Okay. And Wukong found her lair.
Yeah. After she caused trouble for Tang Sanzang again, he finds the lair, sees those ancestral tablets worshiping Li Tianwang and Neja.
And boom, that's his proof. That's why he was so sure when he made the accusation.
Exactly. He had physical evidence connecting her directly to them, at least in her own mind.
Okay. So the whole incredibly tangled story is finally out. Li Tianwang gets it now. He moves to untie Wukong.
But Wukong's not having it that easy.
Of course not. He's got to make a show of it. He says his business is always first losing, then winning.
Love that line.
Me too. So he demands, mind you, to be carried, still tied up, to the Jade Emperor.
Wants to rub it in, basically, make sure everyone sees his victory.
Total Wukong move. So Li Tianwang's probably just sighing inwardly at this point.
Pretty much. He asks Golden Star for help, right? The celestial diplomat.
Yeah, good old Golden Star. And he handles it perfectly, doesn't he? Starts reminding Wukong of past favors.
Smooth operator. Brings up helping Wukong get his first job, the protector of horses.
The Moen. Not exactly glamorous.
No. But then also his big title, Great Sage Equal to Heaven. Golden Star sort of implies he made that happen.
And even claims credit for Wukong's immortality, saying, you know, you wouldn't even be here without me. But then Venus drops this bombshell, and this is like a huge insight into how heaven actually works.
This is critical. He reveals the time difference. One day up there in heaven is 1 year down on earth.
Wait, hang on. One day is a year.
A full year.
Oh, man. So if Wukong insists on like filing a formal complaint, going through all the heavenly courts.
Exactly. Venus lays it out. That delay. It could mean the demon doesn't just marry the Tang monk.
Oh, no.
But they could end up having, you know, a kid. A little monk's son, as the text puts it. The whole journey totally derailed.
Wow. Okay, so that's the pragmatic side of divine bureaucracy right there.
And you see the Wukong just process this. The anger is still there, but he gets it.
He gives in. Let's Li Tianwang untie him. Probably the big grin.
I bet. Li Tianwang and his generals actually showing Wukong proper respect. He won again.
They apologize.
The family apologizes to Wukong, which basically confirms Wukong was onto something. And right then, Venus steps in, Tai Bai jinxing. He tries to calm things down, suggests a tea break.
A tea break.
And Wukong's reaction as well, pure Wukong.
He doesn't hold back, does he? Just straight up accuses Venus of being corrupt.
Thinks he's taken a bribe, says he's stopping a divine mission just for tea. He's not subtle. And there's another layer here. The Heavenly King, Li Jing, he's still worried.
Worried Wukong will rat him out later.
Exactly. That Wukong might go to the Jade Emperor anyway and spill the beans about the family connection, even if it was unintentional.
So what happens?
Wukong assures him, gives his word as a great man, a Da Song Fu, says his word is his bond.
And that works. The king believes him.
It completely calms the king down, seals this slightly shaky alliance.
Okay, so negotiation complete. Heavenly King Li Jing will gather his troops. Wukong and Venus head back up to the Heavenly Court. What's the official story now?
Venus has to tread carefully. He reports to the Jade Emperor, but frames it strategically.
Yes.
He says the demon is specifically a golden-nosed, white-haired rat spirit, and that she impersonated the king's family. And, crucially, he adds that the Heavenly King has already sent troops to capture her. Makes the king look proactive.
Clever. So the Jade Emperor, who probably already has a good idea what's going on.
He basically just accepts it, grants forgiveness, no big investigation needed. The bureaucracy is bypassed once everyone's on the same page, sort of.
Divine efficiency once you cut the red tape. So Wukong zooms back down.
And finds Li Jing, his son Neza, the third prince, and the whole heavenly army waiting at the southern heavenly gate, ready to go.
They descend to Shankong Mountain, the demon's lair.
And here, Li Jing actually apologizes, humbles himself a bit, specifically to Pigsy, for the whole delay.
And explains how it all started.
Yes, explains that it all stemmed from his family accepting an incense offering from the demon. Just a seemingly small act.
Wow, just accepting incense. And it leads to this huge mess, almost derails the quest, shows how things connect, right?
Absolutely. A small kindness, or what seemed like one, with massive consequences.
So Wukong then describes the lair, this bottomless cave.
Yeah, says it's huge, like 300 leads around, loads of hidden spots. But the main entrance seems quiet, too quiet.
Which gets them thinking strategy.
And the Heavenly King drops that classic line, if you don't enter the tiger's den, how can you catch the tiger cub?
Time to go in.
Yeah.
And I bet everyone wants to be first.
Oh, yeah. Classic scene. Wukong's ready. Neza's ready. Even Pigsy's volunteering, probably making a lot of noise about it.
You can just picture it. Total chaos for a second.
But Li Jing takes charge, makes the tactical call. It's going to be a pincer move.
Okay, how does that work?
Wukong and Neza lead the main force into the cave. He, Pigsy, and Sandy stay outside, guarding the entrance. An inside-outside attack. Eliying Waihei.
Smart. Coordinated. So Wukong and Neza charge in with the troops. What's it like inside?
It's weirdly beautiful, completely unexpected for a demon's den.
Beautiful? How?
The description is stunning. Like twin sun and moon, a jade well warm with smoke, fancy buildings, verdant cliffs and green fields, even spring willows and autumn lotuses. It's almost idyllic.
That's bizarre. A paradise lair?
Yeah.
But their phone search comes up empty.
Nothing. They look everywhere, start to worry she actually sensed them coming and bolted.
But she's trickier than that.
Much trickier. They find it eventually. A smaller cave hidden away, tucked in a southeast dark corner.
Ah, the real hideout. What's that like?
It's described with these great little details. A small door, low room, potted flowers, bamboo, this sort of dark mist, and a faint perfume smell.
Sounds like she was really trying to hole up there, force the Tang monk into marriage in secret.
Exactly. And the discovery is almost accidental.
Oh.
A little demon servant peeks out, bumps right into one of the heavenly soldiers. Oops.
Haha, busted.
Yeah.
And that's all Wukong needs, right?
That's the signal. He's in there like a shot, golden cudgel swinging, Neza and the army right behind him.
Did they find the monk quickly?
Instantly. Find Tang monk, the dragon horse, the luggage, everything. The old rat demon is cornered.
What does she do?
Desperately begs Neza for mercy, tries to appeal to him.
But Neza's not having it.
Not at all.
Yeah.
He reminds her they're acting on the Jade Emperor's orders, and he points out how serious her actions were taking, that incense offering nearly got the monk enslaved forever, wrecked the whole mission.
So no mercy, though.
Nope. The soldiers bind her and the other demons up, rescue complete.
They emerge from the cave. Success.
And Wukong is genuinely thankful. gives heartfelt thanks to Li Jing and Neza. Tang Monk, too, of course, expresses his gratitude.
Now, what about the demon? I bet Pigsy wants to finish her off right there.
Oh, definitely. Pigsy and Sandy are all for immediate execution. Get rid of her.
But the Heavenly King steps in.
Yes. Li Jing insists she has to be taken back to the Heavenly Court. Proper procedure, judgment under divine law, no vigilante justice here.
Right. Maintain order, even with demons, so they split up again.
Exactly. Li Jing and Neza take the army and the captured demon back up to heaven.
And Wukong, Tang Monk, Sandy, and Pigsy.
They just get back on the road, continue the journey west, just like that.
Wow. What an ordeal. And the chapter ends with those lines, right?
Yeah, really evocative. Cut off the silken vine, dry up the golden sea, open the jade lock, escape the cage. Sums up the release perfectly.
A really powerful ending.